Welcome to episode 97 of the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. Today, Monday, April 1st, 2024. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us today, Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader. Welcome.
Morning, Danny.
And we got Trevor Nargis, Supervisor Trading Team.
Hey, Danny.
Sure. So why don't we just hop right into it here and kick it off with strengths here. The big one we've seen of late is interest rates really kind of holding the ceiling here at about 4.25% or so on the 10-year, which is really beneficial for a lot of reasons. But, we'd expect to see interest rate sensitive securities really stand to gain here as, that support seems to be proving to hold here.
Yeah, those have really been holding in from a rate standpoint. Things have really been holding in. When people talk about rate sensitive securities, some people have been keeping an eye on financials, things like that. Obviously, with some banks, they have trading arms. Obviously, if they're trading, various interest rate sensitive securities, there's that too, but also just lending activity that can certainly factor into what might be happening with companies that are adjacent or really impacted by the rate environment. One other thing that we've been watching as well, on Thursday, the University of Michigan consumer sentiment number came out, and it's been the best figure since July of 2021, came in the high 70s. So people are feeling pretty good about things. You talk about that wealth effect in markets, right? Markets have been on a tear more or less since 2023. Even into this year, markets have still continued to be pretty strong. Now, people want to talk about narrow leadership and breadth and all of that. We'll get into some of that later. But as a whole, I think that's certainly contributing to consumer sentiment being solid. Inflation expectations too coming in at around 2.8%. So people are feeling somewhat decent about where inflation is headed. So you have a multitude of variables that are kind of contributing to that.
One last strength I'll point out here is the labor market itself beginning to loosen here a little bit from pretty historically tight levels. And one I specifically like to look at is the U6 rate, which includes part-timers who are looking for full-time work and those who are available for work and have looked in the past, 12 months, but haven't necessarily actively looked in the past month, which is what the traditional unemployment rate tends to look at. That's up to 7.3%, whereas 6.7, 6.8, where we've been hovering is, historically low. So you're starting to see that creep back up as, perhaps people start to think about looking for work again.
Yeah, so let's take that, Ken, and let's pivot into weaknesses. What do you got?
Sure. So the first one I'll point out is the spread between mortgage rates and treasuries is fairly wide. Based on the data I was looking at last week, about 2.8% versus an average of just 1.2 over the past 30 years. So that spread is, again, fairly wide here compared to what we've seen on average.
So what do you make of something like that, Ken? When we talk about those mortgage rates being a little wider than what we typically see when compared to treasuries, how do we kind of interpret that?
So it puts a lot of pressure, on the housing market in a bit of a negative sense, right? In that new buyers are looking at, a 6.87% mortgage on a 30 years opposed to, those who refinanced in 2021 or bought in 2021 at, 3 or in some cases sub-3 if you really timed it well. It keeps those potential sellers out of the market as well, too, because if you've locked in a 3% mortgage, the cost to move to a new place and refinance it, at 6.5, 7 is dramatically higher than what people are paying currently just on the payment.
And we talk about how something like that contributes to the existing problem that we've seen with the housing market. People talk about the supply and demand dynamics, and I feel like something like this somewhat exacerbates that problem, right? People are less willing to refinance at a higher rate, and with housing demand still being relatively strong and supply being constrained, all those factors just kind of combine and cultivate the problem, make it a little more difficult for people who are looking. You talk about first-time home buyers, people who are trying to get out of renting and into a home. It definitely makes it a little tougher here. Somewhat adjacent to rates, Ken, we've talked about the aggregate bond index year to date, and we're still seeing that as being down, right? Fixed income, typically something that people want to have be a little safer or kind of that bellwether for the portfolio. What we've seen within the fixed income space is that people have been seeking out a little more credit, if you will, in search of returns. And where we really see that is, we've seen things like preferreds and convertibles and high yield all outperform the aggregate bond year to date. conversely, you know, we talk about credit spreads and whatnot, and credit spreads have been super tight. And so given all those things, people have been reaching into or dipping their toes into the high yield space or the more credit oriented segments of the market in search of returns.
Think about the ag index itself. You know, it's fairly tied to the 10-year treasury rate. I won't say it's perfectly correlated, but you know, we've seen that rate creep up so far this year. Is, you know, so far we've priced, you know, 3 potential rate cuts from the Fed out of the market. That's going to naturally put upward pressure on the yield for the 10-year, which has driven a little bit of that underperformance. The good news is it hasn't been dramatic like we saw in, you know, 2021, 22, where you woke up and you check your bond portfolio and you're down 10-15%. This is sub 1. It's just notable, you know, as the rest of the market has kind of rallied so far this year, that it's been a little bit of a weak spot.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, when you see like what the NASDAQ has done. I mean, even just the standard S&P, those have all been chugging along. You got some different kind of things going on, right? In 2022, you had a lot of downside kind of fueled by just rates increasing, right? And equities and fixed income securities took that on the chin, where, you know, as of late, call it the past year, even year to date so far, we've seen equities rally kind of at the hand of multiple expansion. We'll get into that a little more later here. But on the equity note, let's talk about AI here, Ken. What potential weaknesses does that entail?
Typically, when we think about AI and really any major technological advancement, but, you know, the last big one, if you want to call it, you know, the internet age of, you know, early 2000s, is all the productivity gains you get with that. And typically, that's a fairly deflationary environment. And I think the market is assuming that as well for AI. The question is, and, you know, we're still having it debate internally here about, you know, what's our right answer here, is it potentially priced in a little bit too much, or maybe this is less disinflationary than what you'd expect historically, in that you are going to see a lot of productivity gains and things out of AI. There's no question about that. But what it also does do is, in the short term, we've had companies really shift their CapEx towards AI investment and kind of put some of these smaller, I don't want to say lesser projects, but projects with, you know, a lower expected return on the capital, push them off to the side. But what this AI could potentially be doing is driving the cost of those projects down, where all of a sudden you're going to see a massive ramp of projects coming online and a renewed demand for capital as a result of that, which, although I don't think it'll be inflationary, will put a little bit of inflationary pressure into a disinflationary environment and make, you know, the expected productivity gains and cost of capital, you know, a little bit less dramatic than anticipated.
And what you said on the CapEx thing is super interesting. You know, it might not necessarily fit into the four buckets that we kind of touch on in this podcast, but, you know, Jason Cooper, our colleague who's, you know, is on earnings calls and whatnot, and some of the industry analysis pieces that we read and comb through, what's super interesting about AI is that willingness of corporations to spend on that area and cut back on some of the other projects. That kind of willingness or stickiness of AI projects seems to be there a little more than other CapEx projects that companies are working through right now. Ken, what else do you have on weaknesses?
Sure. The last thing I'll point out is just the Fed. We had Governor Waller out talking last week about, again, the continued theme of, you know, higher late rates for a longer period of time. And with the last dot plot, we did see 9 of the 19, you know, voting officials project 2 cuts or fewer in 2024. So it's about 50-50 whether we're 2 or less or you know, 3 or more cuts as we proceed into the back half of the year. And again, we still have all the supply chain disruptions, which we'll get into a little bit, but there's certainly still inflationary pressures out there, even though we have seen overall inflation come down fairly dramatically over the past, you know, year and a half.
Right. Let's pivot into opportunities here. Ken, I'll let you take it away.
The first big opportunity here to think about is this is really a stock picker's environment. You know, we've had a tremendous run, especially on some of these mega cap tech names where there's a lot of overweight positions, probably in a lot of, you know, individual accounts and within funds and things like that. What we've started to see lately, really over the past month or so, is a bit of outperformance from, you know, call it the previous laggards, right? Those that weren't part of the Magnificent Seven, if you will. We're starting to see a little bit of a catch-up trade there where, you know, not that these Mag Seven names have fallen hard, but they're being outpaced now by the rest of the market.
Yeah, and granted, it's marginal now, and we're early on in some of that outperformance, and, you know, that can ebb and flow, and, you know, the market cap weighted index could very well, like, roar back. But when you think of what's been taking place over the past year and some of the run-up in these bigger names, you know, people want to talk about mean reversion and things like that, or just doing your homework. You know, we talk about knowing what you own and really doing your research and making sure you have things hashed out when constructing a portfolio. And so we talk about, you know, the chance to do your homework in an environment like this where potentially the average stock outperforms a market cap weighted index. The average stock, I mean, when I say the S&P equal weight, really presents an opportunity to do your homework, like I said, and find some of the better operators within specific industries. So people might look for companies with healthy financial structures. So looking at the balance sheet, what do cash flows look like, right? How are revenues growing? How are companies navigating costs? What do margins look like? And how does all that information look relative to a company's peer group, right? If it's a better operator in its peer group, maybe that warrants some further deep dive, if you will.
Tying this back into rates and leverage, we're anticipating on our team this higher for longer theme to persist here for a while. We're not going to all of a sudden, you know, have like six cuts within 2 months. That doesn't seem like it's in the cards at the moment. So with that, although the cost of capital, we do expect it to come down somewhat over time as rates decline, but there's still going to be pressure on those really highly levered companies from a performance standpoint and a cost of capital standpoint, especially if they have to refinance. The good news in the short term is that spreads are so incredibly tight that perhaps this isn't a bad time to go issue some debt and refinance some things, but it's still going to be an increase to your overall cost of capital for a lot of those firms.
Yeah, and with respect to cost of capital, and you know, ultimately all of that flows down into what a company is earning. And I think as far as an opportunity standpoint right now, to what I said earlier on doing your homework, is that we could be at this point in the market cycle where we start to see the focus shift from multiple expansion, so valuations growing, right? Where now maybe that focus shifts a little more to earnings growth. You know, over time, read a bunch of literature on, you know, markets in general, and earnings growth tends to be a long-term driver of equity returns. And now we're starting to see forward EPS or earnings per share estimates growing. That could translate into a focus on earnings growth here going forward. And if you have something like that, and again, you can have a multitude of things at play here, but maybe the multiple doesn't have to expand as much, but that stock price, you know, appreciation comes from earnings growing. So a couple opportunities in that sense of doing some deep dives, doing your homework, doing the analysis necessary when looking at constructing a portfolio and knowing what you own and investing in various securities. So Ken, let's pivot into threats here. I'll let you start us off.
The first threat I'll dive into here is the potential for spread widening here in the short to intermediate term. You know, we're looking at fairly historically tight spreads, especially given the environment we're in currently. Investment grade spreads are about 30 basis points below what we've seen on average over the past 10 years. High yield spreads about 50 basis points below what we've seen on average over the past 10 years. And although, you know, the markets have certainly improved, the economy seems like it's doing perhaps better than anticipated, right? Which is why we haven't had these rate cuts yet. Still a potential that you're not necessarily being compensated for the level of risk you are taking on the fixed income side in, as far as corporate spreads.
That high yield situation is something that's super interesting to note. You know, we talked about how strong kind of that credit area of the market has been. You've seen some movement in high yield, but to your point, still has been, you know, historically like tight relative to what you've seen historically. So keep an eye on that naturally. One thing that's super interesting, Ken, you and I were talking about this offline, is kind of threats in the supply chain side of things. I know we both have some things to say here, but I'll let you start us off.
Unfortunately, we had the tragedy in Baltimore last week, which is going to have some ripple effects. To bring this back globally first, before I kind of zoom in on that, right? We still have the major issue with the Houthis in the Red Sea and the Suez basically shutdown is not quite the right term, but traffic is severely diminished there. The drought in the Panama Canal, they're only seeing about 60 to 70% of the normal traffic, just because, not that there's not demand for it, they're just not able to get enough boats through because of the water levels being so low. And now we've got the Port of Baltimore issue, which is going to move a lot of that traffic to some other East Coast ports. And we've already seen a lot of boats that were, you know, tagged for Baltimore heading to LA now, which is a dramatic change in shipping times and cost.
And that was a super interesting thing that you and I were talking about this morning, Ken, is the whole situation with the Francis Scott Key Bridge and the Port of Baltimore. You know, the Port of Baltimore has a lot of things come through it, right? But some key items to take away is it's one of the biggest ports in the U.S. for importing autos. So about 750,000 vehicles came in 2023, led the U.S. ports for tonnage imports of passenger vehicles in 2023 as well. That's coming in. Now going out, a lot of steam coal goes out of the Port of Baltimore, and that goes to, you know, India, Europe, countries, you know, across the sea. But I do want to circle back to what you said on the Panama Canal, is that, You know, you talked about how some ships are being rerouted to other ports across the East Coast, but because of the drought in the Panama Canal, some of these ships are taking that long trip all the way down around South America to go to the west side of the U.S. I just found that to be really interesting. What does that do for, you know, prices and delivery times and all those sorts of things?
It'll take a while for that to kind of bleed over into pricing and things like that. Because, you know, in the short term, yeah, there's always a domestic inventory, both, you know, on our side and, you know, on the coal side, you know, India's got some inventory and things like that as well. So in the short term, you won't see much, but call it in the probably the 3 to 6 month window. That's where you could potentially begin to see some impacts. What's interesting on the auto side is you're starting to see a lot more incentives on new car purchases. And now with that supply chain going to be, you know, fairly severely disrupted by this, you know, the 750,000 cars a year go through that port. You know, eventually they'll find ports to get the stuff in here. But, you know, perhaps you could see that scale back or, you know, cool down a little bit as far as, you know, the incentives, because, you know, there's going to be a lack of supply in new cars in a short window.
It's super interesting to see how it's potentially going to play out, you know, kind of wrap up what we're talking about as far as the Port of Baltimore is concerned. Some people are estimating that every day the port is shut down is going to be about a $15 million hit in economic activity. So we'll see. To your point earlier, you know, what does that end up doing to supply situations and pricing? You know, you got domestic inventory. So it's kind of a time will tell type thing, but definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, and there's always risks, like, you know, we saw what, a year and a half, 2 years ago with the you know, Port of LA and some of the labor issues they've had there. If that, you know, if that pops up again, now we've got a major issue. Again, just something to keep an eye on, and it'll take a little while to play out.
Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. Always wrap with our headlines. Headline strength this week, guys?
Firmness in treasury yields.
Headline weakness.
The elongated sales cycle for non-AI projects.
Headline opportunity.
Broadening out of the overall markets.
And a headline threat.
Deficits keeping rates elevated and potential supply chain issues.
Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. That's episode 97. Ken Bellinger, senior trader. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny.
And Trevor Narges, supervisor trading team. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.